Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Finding someone on an online Catholic dating site shouldn't be like shopping for a blender. So why do most dating sites leave you feeling like you're shopping for a spouse? At Catholic Singles, we connect members through our unique user polls and activities, which help you discover other members and their personalities and interests. Because you're a person, not a profile picture. So stop shopping and start discerning. Trust your love story to the original Catholic dating site and use the promo code BREADBOX at checkout for 20% off at catholicsingles.com.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
This is Katie Prejean McGrady, and this is Ave Explores. When we think of living our faith and putting our faith into action, and we've talked about this on the show before, there's oftentimes this deep desire, rightly so, to go out to the margins and to the very edges of the world even, to do the work that is necessary, to feed the hungry, to clothe the naked, to visit the imprisoned, to give shelter to the homeless, to provide for the impoverished. As we've talked about pretty consistently in every episode, though, the hungry and the naked and the imprisoned and the sick and the impoverished are often right around the corner from us. We might have just been blind to that. Catherine Lopez wrote in her piece last week that, you know, on her walk to work every day, whether in D.C. or New York, the two places that she finds herself the most, she's often struck by how many people she passes who are begging for food, for even just acknowledgement that they're there, and how it's part of her mission in life to help these people feel seen. She doesn't have to go to a third world country. She doesn't have to go on a pre-planned mission trip. She doesn't have to go paint a house. All noble things to do, but she can just walk to work and still love someone and help someone in need on that walk that she takes every day. What a unique concept, right? What a fascinating idea that the putting of our faith into action is often done in very normal, almost mundane, simple circumstances in the places that we find ourselves all the time. In our neighborhoods, in our communities, in our grocery stores, in our workplaces, in our church parishes. We don't have to go very far to find people in need and to put our faith into action. There's a great quote from Blessed Basil Moreau, the founder of the Congregation of Holy Cross. He says, "With eyes of faith, consider the greatness of your mission and the wonderful amount of good which you can accomplish." I love that. The founder of the Congregation of Holy Cross, who, of course, is based and housed in the United States of America at the University of Notre Dame, more affectionately called Go Fighting Irish. Blessed Basil Moreau, who didn't live a tumultuous life so much as a life that was very focused on answering the call that he felt and sometimes was criticized for it and even ousted for it, but yet was still such a faithful man of God and who was so confident in the direction he wanted to see the congregation go and the work he wanted to see this order do in educating and serving and loving people and helping the ignorant learn. And giving space and place to people who might have been forgotten as they sought to understand and to learn what the truths of the faith and the truth of life actually is. Blessed Basil Moreau might not be the social justice warrior saint that you think of when we think of faith in action. He's certainly not as well known as, say, Mother Teresa of Calcutta or even Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, but the work that he did and the order that he established and the work that they now do is essential to not only the teaching and the practice of Catholic social teaching, but of all men and women of goodwill and of faith, recognizing the mission and the good that we can do. That's what we're having a conversation about today. The history of the Congregation of Holy Cross, the purpose, again, of putting our faith into action, doing another 10,000-foot view look at what it means to set our faith into action, but really trying to understand the story of this very holy man who had this very specific vision and wanted to do a necessary and important work in the world. You know, as we think about our faith in action, and even as we wrap up our series on faith in action, this being the second to last episode of this particular season, the thing that I think I've learned the most, and I hope that our audience, you listeners, have learned as well, is that, again, it doesn't necessarily require a crazy amount of effort or this heroic stretching to do good. That's, of course, good to do, to stretch and to do the heroic things, but it's often in the simple, present, everyday ways that we can love those in need, that we can respond to the corporal work of mercy that might be right in front of us in that moment, that we can love the person we pass by, that we can serve within the neighborhood in which we find ourselves. As we've unpacked all of this throughout our Ave Explorer series, through articles and other podcast episodes, through videos, showcases, saint biographies, challenges, I'd encourage you to hop on over to AveMariaPress.com to find all of the content that we've created. There's some excellent stuff there. I think this is my favorite series we've done so far, and I know I say that every time, but that's just because it keeps getting better. So I hope you go on over to Ave Maria Press to find all of that great content, to subscribe and hear all of our other shows, and learn about all these things that we've talked about over the past few weeks. Today's episode is with a young Holy Cross priest, Father Michael Thomas, who is down in Chile teaching at one of the Holy Cross schools. And he tells the story of Blessed Basil Moreau so passionately, and he talks so eloquently about this work of social justice that we're called to take on, the work of prayer that is required when we do the work of social justice. What it means to put our faith into action, not just from a theoretical perspective, from a practical perspective, to love those people in our neighborhood, to serve those people in our direct line of vision, to reach out to those men and women we know, perhaps are even in relationship with, who need our love, compassion, and care. So today, I bring to you this excellent conversation with Father Michael Thomas of the Congregation of Holy Cross about Blessed Basil Moreau and setting our faith into action. Well, Father Michael, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Un gusto. Great pleasure to be with you guys. It's 10:10 here in Santiago, Chile. We're only 1 hour different, but we're about, I don't know, like 12 hours apart on an airplane.
It would take a so while to get there, especially now since none of us can fly.
Yes.
How did you end up in Chile? And then how did you end up as a Holy Cross priest? What's your story? Who are you? I'm learning this myself. Like I know the bio from the email. That's about it.
Perfect. I mean, so your first question, how did I end up in Chile? When I was a seminarian with Holy Cross, I think in 2015, I visited one summer because we have our summer placements where we explore different places where Holy Cross is working in the United States, but also abroad, in Asia and Latin America, and in Africa. And so I came here to Chile to our school called St. George's College. And they use the word college here, but it denotes usually pre-K through 12th grade. So you've got 14 years of schooling. And I came down to this place we have called St. George's, which has 2,700 students, 300 staff, where the congregation has been for about 70 years. And it's one of the more famous schools in Santiago. So I first knew the school back in 2015. I worked here for like 2 months. I thought it was really cool. Then I went back to do more years of study. And then when I was finishing my theological studies back in 2018, yes, that's right, 2018, the provincial, we were all getting our assignments, and we get, you get an email that the provincial wants to have a breakfast with you, and it's at Bob Evans. So that's like, that's like good. And so you at like 8 a.m. So we were in finals, and he at, in the winter semester, the fall semester, and he was meeting with us, and he was like, Michael, how are you? Blah, blah, blah. We want you to consider going to Santiago, Chile next year, where you will be placed as a seminarian, get ordained a deacon, and then get ordained a priest about 10 months after that. And when the provincial says, I want you to consider, what he means is you're going. So like, prepare. I want you to prepare yourself to go.
Right.
And that's how it is. But we couldn't say anything for a while because we were still hammering out details. But in June of 2018, I came down here as a seminarian. So I'm coming up on my 2-year mark. Mm-hmm. And I am now a sophomore homeroom teacher. I have 39 kids in my homeroom. I have, and actually in 47 minutes, I'll be on Zoom with them. I teach theology in 10th grade and 12th grade, and I'm a chaplain to the high school, which means I work in campus ministry, here at the school, and it's a blast. It's a mammoth institution. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we've got, 1800 families, something like that. But that's kind of how I got to Chile from the seminary.
Was there a language gap, or did you already know? Is it Portuguese or Spanish in Chile?
It's Spanish, and I minored in it in undergrad. I studied political science and philosophy, and I minored in Spanish, so I had a little bit. I was in Mexico for a summer in formation, in Chile for a summer in formation, and I lived a year at our parish in South Bend, St. Adalbert's Parish, which is now majority Hispanic, specifically Mexican immigrant parish. So I had practice, but it was really here that I learned it. But Chilean Spanish is different. They have lots of little modismos, little Chilenismos, and a very specific way of speaking that makes them kind of famous, actually.
Yeah,
South America.
What drew you to, I mean, you said yes because you had to, but I mean, obviously you were in that Bob Evans with the provincial because you were a member of the congregation. You didn't just show up one morning.
I was having my biscuits and gravy at 8 a.m. Yeah.
I love that the provincial takes you to Bob Evans. That's like my favorite.
It's perfect because it's right by campus. Yeah. It's right by his office.
I've been there. Yeah.
You know that one.
Father Dennis and I had breakfast there. One of the vocations recruiters.
I guess there's a lot of a business that goes down in the Bob Evans. It's a great breakfast.
It's a place that will one day, like in hundreds of years when the congregation is being written about, that location will be cited as the beginning of many heroic stories.
The site of the missioning of so-and-so and where Katie Prejean passed through with Dennis Streck.
So were you a student at Notre Dame? Is that what led you to the congregation? You just knew about them? What's that story?
So I'm from South Bend, and I went to our grade school at Holy Cross Parish, so K-8, which is, that parish was founded by Father Soren. There's the majority of the history of the school has always been Holy Cross Sisters, actually. Really early on in the school, I remember they were teaching us French because the community is a French order. And so that was the traditional language they always taught the kids, like as their second language, but they switched to Spanish when I was little. But that's how I first knew the congregation. So the first priest I ever met was Father Tony Zicali. And I remember being in like second grade and him getting us ready for First Communion, taking us on a tour of the church, coming to our class to do like Q&A. And we had weekly mass from kindergarten to eighth grade. Maybe not kinder. Maybe they waited till first grade, but went really little.
Wednesday.
Yeah. So, but actually, Katie, my family's not Catholic. Oh. So they sent me to this school, and because it was, St. Joe was a good school, the Catholic stuff was kind of a bonus. But it made a really big impact on me. And I went to Catholic high school, St. Joe High, right next to Notre Dame. And it was really there too, that I had learned when I was a kid really to pray at the grade school. I mean, our family, my family's Protestant, so we went to church every Sunday. Prayer was a part of our lives as a family. I was baptized in third grade. So I had Mass on Wednesdays and then our church on Sunday. And, but they also, they taught me to love Jesus at that church. They taught me to love the Bible. They taught me to pray. But also at my grade school, that's where I learned the Mass. I learned, the Rosary. I learned the Stations of the Cross. That was actually very impactful for me in middle school. The Stations we used to do all school in Lent. St. Nicholas Day with Father Tony dressed up like St. Nick, burying these scrolls that said Alleluia on them at the beginning of Lent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then everyone going outside and digging them up and holding them. So like the kind of liturgical sense and ritual really formed me even as a kid, even though I wasn't a Catholic. So it was, but it was in high school. I remember Catholic doctrine class when I was a freshman with Mrs. Carrier, and we were learning like the five ways of the five ways of proving God from Thomas Aquinas. And we were learning about freedom and sin and grace and angels, like all these things. And I remember just being blown away. I'm like, wow, these guys have like thought of everything, like every, and I was impressed at that age, even at, I was 15 then, but at 15 of the sophistication, the fact that every question I had about what Catholics believed, there were even more questions and better questions that they had to raise that I hadn't even thought of. The kind of the ways that everything kind of began to fit together, kind of it's like system of ideas. So then it was very intellectual, but I was impressed by that. And I remember as a sophomore, though, in our New Testament class, when we read John 6, Bread of Life discourse, eat my flesh, drink my blood. I am the bread come down from heaven. Whoever does not eat my flesh and drink my blood does not have life within him. And our teacher just told us that's the Eucharist. And it was like a moment of real clarity. I remember that moment. I remember where I was in the room. I remember that afternoon. And it was kind of a lucid, clear moment interiorly where I thought, I believe that. I believe that that is what the Eucharist is. I knew what the Eucharist was from all my formation in Catholic school. And so those were two important moments in high school. And then when I was leaving, I had a lot of conversations with one of my high school teachers who, now looking back, I mean, she was super young, like 22, 23, just graduated college, teaching us apologetics. And we would talk and talk and talk about Catholicism, about grace, about the sacraments and Paul and the early church. And, I was... Then as a freshman, I went to IU Bloomington, Indiana University Bloomington, with 40,000 of my closest friends down there. So, and I entered into RCIA as a freshman there. So that's, and then I had First Communion and was confirmed at 19 and down there in Bloomington at a parish, St. Charles Borromeo, right next to campus. So it was a beautiful thing. And receiving the Eucharist, I remember thinking, I don't know how I lived before without this. Like the closest communion you could have on earth with Jesus, the on this side of eternity. It really changed my life.
And that, and so receiving the Eucharist, was it then just like, well, I want to give this to people? Like obviously, I'm Catholic now, so I'm going to do the most Catholic thing and become a priest.
Right. So actually, right after, it actually begins to touch on our topic for today, which is kind of thinking about what is the social doctrine of the church? How does the church think about politics, society, economics, community? what justice looks like is right after that. So the school year ends, I've had my first communion, and I found myself for an interesting set of circumstances at the South Bend Catholic Worker. Mm. And it was at the South Bend Catholic Worker, which is it's a movement started by Dorothy Day in the 30s in New York, who's now a servant of God, and is actually Cardinal Dolan is the cardinal kind of in charge of her cause because she's from New York, or her cause is opened in New York. And I found myself there, and it was at this place, which has like a soup kitchen. It also has a community, a men's house and a women's house for people who might otherwise be on the street, live with students. We live together, we pray together, we eat together. We have gardens and chicken coops and like all these kind of cool things. But it was there that I met Holy Cross seminarians who were my same age. They were undergraduate seminarians. And also like just other Catholic students our own age. But it was because of my friendship with seminarians that I began to come around like and see the seminary, that I began to meet Holy Cross priests and kind of connect the dots. I'm like, wait, you guys were the ones who were there when I was a kid at St. Joe Parish. And it was really there that this in my joy at the Catholic Worker with these guys. And I would begin to think like, why can't this be your whole life? Mm-hmm. Like this, like that your whole life would be community, prayer, and this mission. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was kind of my, and I saw in them a radical living out, because it's a religious community too, a radical living out in community of this kind of giving yourself totally over for the gospel and for this life that is willing to leave things behind in a way that was similar to the Catholic Worker. But in the end, and that was really what I was discerning between kind of leaving college. In the end, it wasn't for me. I did feel called to be a sacramental minister as well. And so that to share, to give exactly what I had found so much joy and life in, which were the sacraments. And so, and to kind of build up the church, like that's like, I wanted to be someone who helped to kind of build up this body. And this church who I love so much. And so, I think that, but when I was in fourth grade, I did write in my prayer journal, you know, I always wanted to be a kind of a missionary or a kind like, even as a little kid, there was in something in me. I was a pretty pious kid that I wanted to give myself to God in a special way. Even from really little. I found in Holy Cross and in the priesthood, like a transformation of who I am, but it also was deeply continuous in a weird way with a lot of kind of already who I was, kind of my desires. And I think also the way God led me from a little Protestant kid in South Bend, Indiana to a Catholic priest in Chile, there's actually more continuity than, one would think.
Yeah. So, I mean, a vocation never dulls a person's personality. It only enhances it. And it sounds like your zigzag journey to Chile and to the congregation wasn't a zigzag for the Lord. It was more like a very clear trajectory of, well, this is what I want you to do. And it's just going to be a matter of time before you figure that out.
I hope you're enjoying this conversation with Father Michael Thomas, who is down in Chile with the Congregation of Holy Cross. We have a lot more coming in this conversation, so please stay tuned. But I did want to let you know that all of the content for Ave Explores, the series on faith and action, is currently available at AveMariaPress.com. Every article, podcast, video, showcase, challenge, saint biography, it's all there, right for you,
to click on, to read, to share, to take advantage of. We're so proud of what we've created, and we hope that you enjoy it as well. So go on over to AveMariaPress.com, and you can find everything. Articles from Father Josh Johnson, a video from Michael Gormley, content about different ministries throughout the country that are doing great work. I think you'll really enjoy it. So go on over to AveMariaPress.com. The link is down in the show notes to see the whole series. What I'm struck by in that story is that the congregation immediately, it was clear to you that those were the guys that you wanted to be a part of, that their joy, that their mission. Tell us a little bit about, I mean, the history and the mission of the congregation. We know, of course, Notre Dame University. We know Father Soren. It was begun by Basil Moreau, who is a blessed, correct?
Correct.
And then we've got the famous St. André Bessette. Everybody knows this guy, the door holder.
Brother André, yes.
But tell us a little bit about that mission that you discovered when you entered the seminary. And I mean, I've been very blessed to spend time with Holy Cross priests up at Notre Dame when I've done Notre Dame Vision and when I've been working at Ave. And every time I walk away from a congregation priest, I'm like, man, I want these guys in every diocese in the country. Like, I want them to run the church. And I'm biased in saying that. But tell us a little bit about that mission.
Well, like you said, well, Katie, I mean, so Basil Moreau founds a congregation in the early 19th century in France, and immediately, and he kind of, so he was a theology professor, and he kind of, and he was really popular and a really popular spiritual director. And so what he did was he started to kind of organize kind of his kind of best students who were also in the, he was a diocesan priest, and he got these guys together. He eventually joined them to the brothers who were founded by Father DeJarrier, who were sort of organized, who were teaching brothers, and these kind of auxiliary priests who were helping out, preaching missions, doing all this. And so immediately we're in education, and then immediately we're in mission work. So he's sending some of the first missions, Algeria, Bangladesh, Poland, and Rome, North America, Canada, actually your neck of the woods too. They were down there in
New Orleans,
around Louisiana. And so, and I mean, there wasn't enough money. There was never enough money. There were never enough people. There were plagues. I mean, people were dying in boats trying to get to Bangladesh. They were dying from the plague in northern Indiana and in Louisiana. I mean, all kinds of difficulties. And Basil Moreau was convinced that this congregation would be is an instrument of God for the world, and that it's really interesting, his theology, that because our unity with Jesus was so intimate, and the heart of the spirituality, I mean, that is the heart of the spirituality of Holy Cross, is conformity to Christ. I mean, that we talk about the cross as our hope, that comes. The primacy is this union with Jesus. And that means, because of that unity, that we will live what Christ lived, which was the cross, and then, of course, the resurrection. But so for Basil Moreau, all these hardships were, I mean, he's writing over and over and over about the cross. It's actually a good sign, he says, like, because that means that we are living our vocation of, as our constitutions now say, our mission is the Lord's. We have no mission outside of what Christ's mission is vis-a-vis the church and vis-a-vis the world. And so if we're doing something other than that, we're not doing our mission. And that gets articulated very specifically by Moreau and by what has been the kind of lived experience of all kinds of varieties of ministries, but specifically, there's a deep anchoring in the work of education. And that expresses itself right now in 2020 in grade schools, trade schools, high schools, universities, orphanages, soup kitchens, parishes, in 20 countries. If I think about our context down here, so we're in Chile, with schools and parishes and an orphanage. We're in Peru with a parish that was founded up in the hills of the slums of Lima that I just saw in February, that has the Holy Cross priests arrived there before there was electricity, like in the 70s and late 60s, before there was electricity, before there was running water. They lived in boxes up on these hills outside of the city of slums with not a shred, blade of grass. And from that time have grown the community and the parish. Mm. Our Lord, the Lord of Hope is the name of the parish, has grown up with this población out there. And so now the parish is responsible for 250,000 people, over 19 chapels.
Wow.
Last year, there were 1,200 first communions, like 1,000 baptisms. I saw in that parish almost 200 youth preparing themselves to be catechists. So their youth group is like 500 kids. Yeah. There's like 200 kids who are like, I want to teach confirmation. I want to teach first communion.
Yeah.
So, and there's a clinic there that is attached to the parish. It has 1,000, according to the people there, 1,000 patients a week. Wow. Because it's been, so with a staff of 60 people, it also has a national model for a facility, a place for kids who have special needs from 0 to 14, 15 years old, and support for their parents. That's like a national model.
Mm-hmm.
And that's attached to the parish too. There's about 100 kids a day who pass through that place.
Wow.
And so in Brazil, we have high schools, we have parishes. And so just if I think of the continent of Latin America, of South America, of Brazil, Peru, in Chile, there is this emphasis on the care and formation too of the young. That in addition, I mean, there's parish work, and that gets everybody. But I would say too, in Holy Cross parishes, there is an emphasis and a preoccupation for the formation of the young. Most of our parishes are attached to schools in the United States. So I would say that.
Well, I mean, you're talking about this mission is our work is the work of the Lord. And that's beautiful because that's really a mantra for everyone.
Yes.
Specifically, we can witness that in the work of the priests and brothers and sisters of the Congregation of Holy Cross. But there seems to be this, as you're talking, I keep coming back to, it's almost like the congregation wants to see people and immediately assess their situation and say, how can I love them as Jesus loves them? And in some instances, that's we're going to build an orphanage because there are children that need a home. In some instances, it's we're going to put a school here because these people need to know everything from math and science to theology. We need to put a parish here because people need to receive the sacraments. It seems like the congregation has this gigantic tent, and underneath it, all of these incredible things can happen. As I'm sitting here listening to you, my question then becomes, well, how does that get extrapolated for me in 2020 in Southwest Louisiana, where, you know, I can't go join the order. I could maybe send a kid there someday, fingers crossed, but like what, how can
we're
I?
Ready. We're ready for that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I've often joked with my husband that, you know, if we have more than two kids, one of them Jesus gets one of them and they can fight amongst themselves, but Jesus gets one of them.
Yes.
But you know, how can I be part of a mission that is the Lord's in a regular life circumstance? And most of the people that are listening to our podcast would find themselves in, you know, they're lay men and women who go to church, who love Jesus, but maybe want to do more. And this whole series has really been about that. What would you encourage them to do, to ponder, to think about more than just writing a check or, you know, dropping off some cans at Catholic Charities? Like what, how can we participate in that mission?
What a beautiful question. And that, as you've, I mean, that is the central question of Christianity. That's what our baptism means. That's what the Eucharist means. And that's actually just a really side note. That's actually something so cool about Moreau is he was a little bit ahead of his time in the dignity and the demands that he understood baptism to be on Christian. And he would have been wanting, he would have been, that would have been the very subject of his preaching. And I think from a Holy Cross's perspective on this would be the first move for living that mission is intimate knowledge of the Lord. So the first move is conformity to him through spending time with him and knowing him, which means prayer. And it means specifically prayer, as Basil Moreau would say, meditating on the life of Jesus. Mm. So he would say, you know, and he wrote these spiritual exercises that are modeled in many ways. They're in deep conversation with Ignatius of Loyola's spiritual exercises, but with very important distinctions. And also Thomas Akempis's The Imitation of Christ. Those are really important sources for Moreau's own exercises of 4 weeks. But they are based upon this deep, slow, and intimate meditation upon the life of Christ from his infancy in Nazareth to conversing with the resurrected Christ in the upper room. So I would say move number one, prayer, meditating on the life of Jesus in the Gospels, mm-hmm. knowing him so that our hearts desire what his heart desires, our mind thinks how he would think. Basil Moreau even talks about the transformation of our feelings and affect, so that we would, laugh at what Christ would find funny, like, and be horrified by what Christ would be horrified by. Moreau quotes Gregory of Nyssa saying, "The Christian should paint with his life the life of Christ." Mm-hmm. Like, you are an art. Like, every person is an artist. Every Christian is an artist in a sense, and with your life, you should paint his life in your own circumstance, in your own. So the second thing I would say is go and look around. So like so you're meditating on the life of Christ. And then, so those parts of your community mm-hmm. that are essential for the flourishing of your community. And the Catholic philosophical tradition, I think of like, you know, Alistair MacIntyre at Notre Dame or something, he highlights three sites of that in the Christian intellectual tradition. He wants to look at family life, schools, and workplace. Mm-hmm. And so I think a really good advice would say, go find which those things you belong to mm-hmm. already, your family or the life of families that you know, the schools that you know, the workplaces that you're a part of or that you know, and begin there by deliberating with those people. What is necessary for the flourishing of the members of these communities that I know? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. And to ask yourselves why things are the way they are. So to use an example of Alistair MacIntyre, he may look at something like, why is it that in this neighborhood over here, I've got Whole Foods, I've got Costco, I've got, you name it, kind of food access. And then, you know, a mile and a half over here, I've got 7-Eleven. You know, why? Mm-hmm. What would the people over here need to flourish? And to see yourself as a part of that community, rather than to see yourself either as someone kind of only giving charity or something like that. Now, charity is essential. It's actually an essential part of the Christian life. Not only is it often very necessary to have an immediate response to a real need, it's also a practice of love that is deeply embedded in the Christian tradition. Mm-hmm. But to have a more kind of sustained questioning, and here we get into the richness of what is the social teaching of the church, to enter into those communities as a participant in that community and to say, what do the members of this community need for their flourishing? And that's something one discovers in conversation with that community. Mm-hmm. So here's the school of your husband that you brought up. Like, so what is the good, what are the goods at stake in educating the, mm-hmm. I mean, we want them to have serious intellectual growth, serious human formation growth in the virtues. We want them to have physical growth and the development of all their potentialities in that regard. What's that going to take?
Right.
And so those kinds of questions, it's slower work mm-hmm. and it's local, but each one of us belongs to groups already. Mm-hmm. And if we begin to poke around a little bit, we will probably find that there's a lot
yeah.
that could be better.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Well, that's, I mean, you're, you're saying something that there's been this trend, I think, in like the 90s and early 2000s. Well, I'm going to go do mission work, and people would hop on planes and go visit impoverished communities in third world countries who need our charity. But I also can't move to Nicaragua. I can package food, and I can, and my parents were very involved in this Nicaraguan mission group where we would, my sister and I would wake up on Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. and go pack medicine and food. And I mean, it would weeks to prepare. People would go down there for 10 days. They'd come back. My life has been changed. And I mean, even from a young age, I would sit there and think, okay, but what are you, how are you giving medicine to people here in town who need it? Because I know, right, there's not that it's good to go do that international mission work. It's imperative, but there's also people that live next door to me that need help, or in the school community that my husband teaches in. So that principle of subsidiarity is huge in this movement of the work of social justice.
Because you're exactly right, because I won't be the kind of person who is able to figure out what the heck is going on in, mm-hmm, you know, and I say this to you as I sit in my desk in Chile, but right. I won't be the kind of person. It's like, if I don't even know what's going on in my town and I haven't formed myself in the virtues and practices of common deliberation, problem solving, what are the goods at stake here? How do we reach them? How do we do that together?
Right.
What am I going to do in Botswana or in, right, in, I mean, the world is so complicated. And so it's not saying there is actually a vocation and a need for that stuff. It's not saying we should stop it, but right, if the question you're asking is, what do most people do, right, in most settings? Something really cool about Holy Cross is that, you know, that's, people often get our name wrong. They're like the Congregation of the Holy Cross.
Right, right, right.
Assuming that it is in explicit and direct reference to the Holy Cross of Jesus, mm-hmm, it is indirectly referenced to that. It's the Congregation of San Croix, which is the name of a neighborhood in Paris where Basil Moreau founded the community.
Really?
He named us for the neighborhood where we were, which of course was named for the cross of Jesus and Basil Moreau.
Right.
I mean, that was consciously and explicitly part of the name.
Yeah.
But there, I have always liked that because it's kind of like the community from the very beginning has tried to deeply kind of take on the flavor of whatever place it has found itself. So like it requires real discernment, but you have to get into the nitty gritty of those PTA meetings, of those parish committee meetings, of getting your neighbors together, of talking to families. That I think is, and that creates a beautiful, and it's a slower, but it's very deep work.
I my mind is just blown right now by that it was named after neighborhood. I didn't know that. I thought I knew a lot, but I didn't know that.
San Croix, Holy Cross.
Beautiful. As somebody who is French, I love that. But I especially love that there's that, even within the name of the congregation, there's this idea of we're close to the people that we find ourselves in, and we love them in the particulars, and we mission them in that. And I mean, I've seen that on Notre Dame's campus. That's why there's a priest in every hall, right? That lives with those students and gets to know them in that particular situation. That's why there's such an affinity, I think, for, I mean, Father Dennis is the one I know the best, left St. Ignatius, but still talks to those people every single day down in Austin, Texas, because of the closeness. I imagine the same will be true for you if you ever leave Chile. Father, this was a great conversation. Do you have any final thoughts as we wrap it up? What, you know, one last little rah-rah, if we bumped into you in an elevator and you knew this was the conversation we were having, what would you say?
I would say that I want to reiterate the point that you helped us make, Katie, which is the point of Christianity is to say, also at the heart of Basil Moreau, is Christianity forms other Christs. Like that's what, in the end, and that happens through the sacraments, it happens through prayer, meditating on the life of Jesus, becoming another Christ, and then a Christ that is busy and not necessarily the glamorous and cool. I mean, there's a whole complicated world going on in, you know, in the school system of every town, you know, like what do kids, I mean, that if there's a whole complicated world going on in the labor conditions in the family life of every town. And so, I think our mission is to show Christ, to bear Christ into those places, and to extend his mission by extending his person through our own person. And with all of the spiritual and material implications of that mission. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would say. I don't know if that was great,
Katie. It's precisely what I want. I know you have to get to class, but get to class. People won't see my finger quotes, but that's the world we live in. Absolutely. Thank you so much for taking the time. Do you have a Twitter? Do you have an Instagram? How can we follow along with your adventures?
You know, the best way to follow along with our adventures would be Go St. George. That's the Twitter handle of Instagram handle. St. George is the Instagram handle of St. George's College down here in Santiago, Chile. And that would be the best way to see. We live stream masses on that. Mm-hmm. It's very active. Actually,
we'll link it in the show notes for sure. Cause I'm sure everybody wants to, I know I'm going to go check it out as soon as we hang up.
It's cool.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Thank you again, Father, for your time.
Thank you, Katie. This has been really fun. And anytime, you're always welcome down here in Santiago.
Yes.
Not in the near, you probably have trouble
not
getting
anytime
in.
Soon. But,
you know, 2021, we have extra rooms here.
Excellent. I'll bring the family.
Yeah, there's room.
You know, hearing about the neighborhood that Basil Moreau founded the congregation in, this concept of working right where we are to educate and to serve and to love people in the particular circumstances that we find ourselves, it reminds me of another quote that we used earlier on in the season from St. Teresa of Calcutta, Mother Teresa, as she's known. Find your Calcutta. Find the places and the areas and the people right in front of you who need your unique love and service. I mean, what a novel idea that the service and the love that we alone can bring, the mission that we have been given, the challenge that has been placed upon us, is not like anybody else's. You can't be Mother Teresa, you can't be Basil Moreau, you can't be Father Michael Thomas, you can't be me, and I can't be you, but together, each one of us can serve and work within a particular part of the world, within a particular community, with a particular focus, a charism even, and do good. Change the world even. That's what I've loved so much about this whole Ave Explorers Faith in Action series, that we've heard the stories of places that are doing this, that we've learned the practicals of Catholic social teaching, that we have unpacked and explored together the lives of saints and men and women in the world currently right now who are doing these great things. My favorite part of this whole series has been the showcase pieces that we've done. We've shown four different ministries across the country that are doing remarkable work. The Center for the Homeless in South Bend, Indiana, Catholic Charities of Southwest Louisiana, Father Michael Trail, a young priest in Chicago, and his parish's outreach to the Chicago community, and Homeboy Industries, which you've probably heard of before, with Father Greg Boyle over in Los Angeles working with gang members who were trying to heal and to recover and to go back into society free of gang life. We've told these stories because we didn't want this to just be theoretical. We wanted it to be practical. And I hope that we've done that with this series. You can go check out all of that over at the Ave Maria Press website. The link is down in the show notes. Read the articles, share the content, talk about it with your friends and family. We have another bonus episode coming up this Friday with DeCarlos Blackman from the Diocese of Austin talking about restorative justice. So we hope you tune in then. We'd be grateful for a rating, a review, and a share. And as always, we are grateful that you listened. Thanks so much.
Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small batch artisan coffee using top tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/Redbox Media. Experience coffee like never before.